My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the Duck Feed show about Better Call Saul, season two wrap-up.
Yeah, finish up season two. Another weird one. It is coming to light that the show really finds its voice in season three.
I watched the first episode of that today out of inertia, and everyone gets a panic attack as they move into things. So it's nice.
Yeah. It's good to be in heightened emotional zone. So yeah. I says to Mabel.
Yeah. It's also nice. This is kind of nice because they've invented a set of special features that are pretty good.
Yeah. They cut down the quantity and stopped including basically commercials in the listing.
Fewer things that just have clips from the show.
Yeah.
I do have to dock it points for the absolutely insane way that it presents them.
Yeah.
And this has been a problem the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But we are firmly in cyberpunk, what is a gig and what's a side job material, between what is a special feature goes under the special features menu.
Yeah.
What is an episode extra goes in the episode menu. What do you need to have what disc in for?
Yeah.
This is crazy. I can't imagine anybody who wouldn't just want, five episodes on the first two discs and then all the special features on a third disc.
Seems like a good way to do it to me.
The only way to do it. But it is so, it's ridiculous. It's pretty crazy and makes me feel like a caveman doing it. It's very quaint.
Yeah, no, trying to coax it. Also, weirdly, no deleted or extended scenes.
Yeah, I noticed that too. And I'm skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
There were some extended or deleted scenes. Of course there were.
Yeah. You're editing it. It's not this is all we did because we used it perfectly efficient. Nobody on the set poops.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think so. So it's kind of weird, but they are pretty fun features.
Yeah.
Generally. Most of which this season, when you watch the features, you learn that this season had a lot of videos within a video.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a lot of that.
Yeah.
Starting with the cobbler thing, squat cobbler. They actually shot it. They never show it in the episode. I don't know if they ever planned to.
Yeah.
But it's Mark Roach, national hero, just really being game on this.
This is so funny.
It's really funny.
It feels like Mark Roach improvising.
Yes.
A lot of this is just him saying, what if I I need an excuse to be kind of scantily clad. What if I just got out of the pool, but I'm wearing the most bizarre swimming outfit that has ever been assembled?
Yeah, he's wearing a Speedo. He's in a lifeguard outfit, with a very attainable body, and gets out of the lifeguard to the pool and the couch, and just pie. I smelled that pie. I had to get out of the pool. I'm not allowed to swim. My boss won't like me if I eat. Ooh, but it's so fresh and so warm. I wonder what kind it is. It's very funny.
Yeah.
If you've never seen this, I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube. If you don't have these DVDs, this is worth watching. It's very funny.
I have an idea. I'll look at it from above and get a better view of it.
Just see what kind of pie it is.
Yeah.
And just oh no. And then he sits in it, And he starts moaning. It's he can't help it.
Yeah. And because, of course, part of the fetish is the shame. He's oh, no, I can't clean this up. There are berries everywhere.
There are berries. I feel berries. Yeah, it's pretty great. It's real good.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I really tried this time.
Yeah.
Him crying, and then just such a wonderful touch. He blows a whistle at the end.
Yeah, he blows his lifeguard whistle. And then he says, is that okay? And then gets up. pretty funny. We have the full set of commercials basically across the board.
Yes.
We get the Davis and Maine mesothelioma commercial. We get the Who Stole My Nest Egg commercial and the Davis and Maine Sandpiper commercial.
Yeah.
Commitment to the bit. Yep. I didn't need to see those Davis Maine commercials again. There's nothing to them.
Yeah, yeah. You get the gist on all of these pretty much from seeing them in the episodes.
Yeah. If they shot it, have it there. They also have the Saul commercial with the airliner and stuff.
Yes.
The Gimme Jimmy commercial also shows up. There's nothing to really say about them. They're just kind of there. Mm-hmm. Good for them.
Yeah. If you like Jonathan Banks and Mark Margolis, and of course you do, that's an alien thing to say. You do. There's a lot of content with them on here.
Yeah, big season for them.
Yeah. One of the featurettes on the episode Bally High, is a making of the scene where, Mike Hotline Miami's Hector's guys.
Yeah. Where he punches them, and when they're sent to take the message, just take the 50,000. Mm-hmm. They explain his plan, you know, to fight with the carbon paper. They go through his house, which is not a set, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would be a real nightmare to shoot. Then they have, one, I love when I see a special feature and I see like a super fake punch.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, oh, it's crazy they made that look real. They did a really good job with that.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh man, sound editing does so much, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And Vince Gilligan says, you know, Mike is a cold-blooded killer in Breaking Bad. Here, he doesn't want to kill these guys. He sees the blood on his gun. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a little bit shaken.
Yeah.
You know, he's degrading a little bit.
It's actual character insight, which is something that I want from anything where a creator is talking about their thing.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It's good. Mm-hmm. For Fifi, this is the dorkiest fucking thing I've ever seen. Like,
yeah.
They go to Fifi, the actual B-29. There's a thing called the Commemorative Air Force, which is they fly around old planes and mm-hmm. show them off as like a museum. They happen to be free here, and the crew all went up and got in it, and you get Vince Gilligan's like, I'm the front man for an animatronic jug band voice, wearing a hat for just a B-29 bomber, uh-huh. super fortress.
Yeah.
And just like being like, this is great. It's just like one of the best B-29s they ever had. These guys won the war. They were the greatest generation.
You know? And I'm not just saying that.
It's fucking crazy. It's so dorky. And something I think about in these special features, a theme that's going to be where they're like, what if we got the real thing? Mm-hmm. You know, and it makes me think of the special features in Breaking Bad when they made Jesse lift off the bed. It looked so fake.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that I would have wanted a CGI or green screen B-29 bomber. Mm-hmm. I don't know how important it is the fact that it's a B-29 bomber to the show.
Right.
They put a lot of work. They rented this thing. They spent a day. It's really expensive.
Yeah.
And for what? You know, just to show us a cool plane, some real life construction equipment. Like, I don't really understand it. I think Saul could have done that with anything.
Yeah.
Would have been fine. Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's not the thing I like about the show, but you get the sense that the creators, it's something that's very important to them.
I mean, it's from the same, it's weird that both of these are in the same episode because it is very much in line with the, like, oh, we did this as a oneer, you know,
yes.
kind of thing. Like, oh, you just did this because you wanted to. Like,
yeah.
So, you know, somebody was like, what if? And then the answer was yes, with effort. And
yeah.
then they get it. The thing about a CGI airplane is, you know, depending on how well it's done, you can tell. Airplanes and cars, easiest things in the world, yeah. the 3D model.
They do it later in this special features. They uh-huh. do cars, and I never noticed.
Nope.
You know, so it would have been fine, you know, if they really wanted that. It's kind of strange, you know, and yeah. I was thinking about like, oh, does that plot go somewhere? I don't remember. And the guy shows up in the beginning of season 3, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just kind of it's strange. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Doesn't hurt. Makes the show probably like a modicum better. It activates my, this isn't worth $40,000, you know, or however much this cost.
Yeah.
Instinct. Like, this is a bad use of money, just generally.
Well, the special feature is basically a commercial for the Commemorative Air yeah. Force, though.
They might have got that part for free.
Yeah.
Here, but they did get to go up, and they're really psyched.
If I got to go up in that, I would be terrified because it's a plane from the fucking 40s.
Yeah.
But yeah. also, like, I don't know, that'd be cool if somebody was like, hey, do you want to go inside of this? Do you want to be sure. inside this when it's work? Yeah, no, that'll be fine. Cool.
I feel guilty if we like expensed it though for an abject suffering randomization, and that's like a little bit what this feels like to me.
Yeah, and we expense, you know, tons like, of shit for those. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they show that oneer with sneaking through the border crossing. A lot of effect shots. They talk about doing the Hitchcock break in the shot by having somebody walk through, mm-hmm. you know, and compare. Like, a lot of this stuff is digital. You know, again, looks good. And the thing, yeah. I just wonder how much it's worth it, I guess. The thing that I like about this shot isn't that it's a oneer necessarily to me. It's like the tension and like what's happening. The importance of it to the plot is always what I'm interested in.
And also the procedural kind of element to it, too.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I enjoyed that. Like, just like, oh, this is a long, complicated process with lots of places where it could possibly go wrong, you know? I thought that as a featurette, like as something that explains what they did, this was put together very well, you know, having the DP like walking the crew through with toy cars and having that kind of inner cut, you know, split screen with the final product and like showing the digital effects plates. Yes. I was like, yeah, no, I have a pretty good understanding of how this was put together. Like, I feel like I appreciate it, cap or lowercase a, appreciate it more for understanding it. But yeah, it's more of a curiosity.
If they were going to do it, this is how I'd like to see it done. Mm-hmm. You know, that's fine. They, for the last little bit where Mike is going to snipe Hector, that scene has no music, but Dave Porter scored it. And he had a piece of music here he liked, so they show a version with the music. Mm-hmm. Music's good, sure. Yep. You know, I'm glad this was kind of neat. I was expecting it just to be Dave Porter like talking about, like, one of the things that's great about the set of special features is we get, when we get insight into process, it's not the same shit we've gotten forever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just people talking each other up with a clip from the show. Mm-hmm. Like, we actually get to see Dave Porter do the thing rather than just being like, yeah, you know, the music's a character or whatever. It's more interesting than it could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get to the those weren't special features. We get to the actual special features under the special features menu.
Yes. Starting with a little feature on Jimmy and Kim. Jimmy and Kim, a complicated relationship, and this starts out good, and then it gets to restating things that we know.
Yeah. This is probably the closest to doing that bad special feature thing.
Yeah. But you get Bob Odenkirk and Ray Seahorn interacting and having a chemistry and joking around.
Yeah. And they're goofy. You know, they're, mm-hmm. they're fun together. You know, they talk about kind of how they both envisioned their relationship.
Yeah.
You know, being in the mailroom, bonding over the fact that they're old heads. You know, mm-hmm. everyone else is like a 20-year-old and stuff. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, Peter Gould talks about the moment after they swindle Ken when Kim kisses Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the pool is like one of the most romantic things ever in any visual medium. I see he sells it real big in a funny way.
Yeah, I don't know about that, Peter, but it is a good scene. Like,
it's a great scene.
You know, Ray does a very good job of that look.
Yeah, it's a great scene. Yeah. You know, everybody's doing good work in here. We get to a surprisingly long thing about making Davis and Maine.
This is very detailed. Yeah,
they get the two set designers who do not have camera presence.
No.
They do not seem comfortable at all. It's very funny.
the woman one
who
is
doesn't
very,
talk.
Yeah. Always present, but never speaks.
Until she just starts saying the name of artist.
Yes.
There. And the other guy who does speak is not like good at it or anything.
Yeah.
But how they put together Davis and Maine in the process, and this is interesting, like, mm-hmm. it's supposed to be on par in terms of kind of stature with HHM, but a very different vibe.
Yeah.
You know, so they went, they found this library and kind of used this part off to the set, you know, as this bullpen and created it to kind of make this fictional law office that's like cool.
Mm-hmm.
Pull up a beanbag.
Yeah. You
know, office.
Making it real Santa Fe, right?
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. Like, there's a lot of just kind of art that I didn't notice because I don't especially care about Davis and Maine very much.
No.
Talking about like, yeah, no, we went to great lengths to like get Santa Fe artists kind of featured.
Yeah. And I will say like this, none of this art is really to my taste.
Yeah.
Either.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine.
But photography. You know, yeah.
Yeah. It's just not to my taste or anything. So I didn't notice in the episode, but I'm glad they did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good for them. Yeah. As a thing, a lot of the stuff was original, like in the library, a lot of the, they couldn't do anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they did just like rebuild a part of this library. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It's also the fact that it's all a set. My favorite part of this was the outdoors was a set.
Uh-huh.
When they show that, like with the actual plants and stuff, because fake plants look bad on TV, mm-hmm. according to them. That was just really neat in terms of an artificial zone. Like, you're still inside that library and you go outside.
Yep.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. They spend some time talking about like, yeah, we wanted to make this place like feel like a bad fit for Jimmy. Is that the case? It's not what Saul ends up having with the, you know, the fake pillars and the constitution and stuff, but like, you know, that's him as a broken man.
Yeah.
Putting everything together. Like, this is still like nice. Like, HHM is a bad fit for him, but this is more. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I buy that this by itself is a, is a bad thing.
I don't know if they're specifically talking about it like visually only.
Yeah.
You know, because it is a bad fit overall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. Yeah. I also thought that, but I also don't know what a good fit would be for like a known law office,
mm-hmm.
you know, for Jimmy. So. Favorite part of any of these things is a gag reel.
Mm-hmm.
This is very good.
Yeah.
It's very funny. It's always funny.
I love watching people break.
Yeah. It's the best. It's really good. You know, it begins with and ends with these cute little bits. here, like where they show the mesothelioma commercial, and that's the final shots of Breaking Bad with them all criticizing it.
Yeah. You know, I want really to sue the people who made that.
Yeah, if you see this, do you want Apocalypse Now or do you want this? You're gonna put on your DVD of Apocalypse Now
every fucking time.
Yeah, pretty funny. Bob starts falling in the sectional between him and Ray. That's really cute.
Yeah.
This is all just very good. I could watch this for the rest of my life.
Bloopers. Just you know, some of it's forgetting lines, but also some of it's like, oh my gosh, that little scene, like where Kim says like, oh, what's not to love, and then just Bob goes, I don't believe you, I think you're still upset.
Yeah, you didn't sell that quite yet. Yeah. There's a great shot with Mike where a really big bee shows up, and I was like, I know this is going to be about that bee. Does it sting him? And then after the thing, he just goes, fucking bee, that's a big-ass bee, brother. And I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah, it's a big bee, Mike.
Yeah, brother, yeah.
High five.
Yeah. All the Mike stuff is good. Price, when the police call again, they're sound, he, instead of doing it, just kind of like angry, he goes, fuck! And he's like, is that too much?
I can't believe this is happening really to me.
Yeah, it's great.
And then, more excellent Jonathan Banks stuff. He's you know, acting with Kaylee when she's playing with the pig, a little pig doll, and he jokes about stomping on it, and he swears, and she's like, oh, I get a dollar now.
Yeah, she turns to the camera like real like hey, hey, hey. It's super cute.
Yeah.
And then we get Mark Margolis and Jonathan Banks talking in conversation with them, which is nice, because I like these actors and they're interesting.
Yeah,
you know,
not so much into it when they're talking, like when they're saying, you know, names of people they did plays with.
When they do that,
it's the dolled up.
It's all dolled up. This literally turns into all dolled up at a certain point. I just like them as guys.
Oh yeah, yeah. But like, so I just kind of, you know, I watched this at 1.5 just because the PlayStation 5 lets you do that, and skip forward whenever they got into all dolled up stuff. But like, there's interesting stuff here, like them talking about like dealing with poverty as actors, like, you know, we're old and we're still kind of, you know, scraping, you know, Jonathan Banks does commercials. Very funny anecdote from Mark Margolis saying like, I've only done 2 commercials and sales went down every time.
Yeah. That's cute. Yeah. You know, so interesting interview. This is also on YouTube if you want to watch it. That's how I first saw this.
Oh yeah.
Just cause I didn't know it was a special feature. I just saw like in conversation with Mark Margolis and Jonathan Banks, put it on while I was cleaning my room or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I clean my office. Pretty good. An interesting thing when I was looking at this, I had the thought, I found a bad website, because I was like, and I'm not, you know, I hope people who listen to this know that this came with good intentions. I had the thought like, what ethnicity is Mark Margolis? Because he plays Hector. So, you know,
He's Cuban. He talks
his ethnicity. So he's from that, but he's Ashkenazi Jew, according to internet, multiple sources. So, you know, from Cuba and stuff, he's got the voice and everything. And when I was searching that, I did find like a website that was like celebethnicity.com or something.
Uh-oh.
I didn't click on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't click on it. I just like used other results from that. But I was like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
That's for people to do weird.
That
sucks.
Don't care for that very much.
No. And you see my continued adventures of watching like season, you know, one season sitcoms and thrillers and stuff. I love seeing all of these actors basically. You see like Mark Margolis and stuff.
Oh yeah.
In bit parts in these shows that didn't make it. You know, he really is a working actor.
Yeah, yeah. There was a funny anecdote in there that I completely forgot. I'll remember it later. It was Mark Margolis getting like super angry. Telling this anecdote about a director. He's like, okay, can you drop your accent? And you know, he doesn't speak like Hector Salamanca all the time.
Not even a little bit. Yeah.
Not even a little bit. He's putting on that accent. And he's like, well, what do you mean? Like, just drop the accent. It's like, I don't have a particularly strong accent. And it's like, well, you know, can you do like a Midwestern accent? It's like, why didn't you say that?
Yeah. They're old.
Yeah.
They're old grumps. One of the things people who were asking or thinking about other spinoffs or prequels or whatever they could do for this, one of the things people have brought up a bunch is doing a Mike prequel. Mm-hmm. And like, that man is too old to do that. I don't think you can risk it.
No.
Could de-age him a little bit. You know, the technology exists, but it's, I don't know. He's in his 80s, like well into his 80s. I don't want him
obviously
it would be good, but he can rest. Let him rest.
Yeah. You would get into like, oh, we have to cast somebody to be young him, you know, like being a crooked cop on the force, but also I don't want another crooked cop show.
I also don't want anyone else really playing Mike.
No.
You know, I would watch the crooked cop show if it's from these people.
Yeah.
Like I would have said that about Breaking Bad as well. Like I didn't want like a crime show. Mm-hmm. It's like how I feel about The Wire.
Yeah.
Like I don't really like, I want a cop show, but that show is good enough that it's good, mm-hmm. but I just don't. Yeah. Don't need anybody else playing Mike.
Nope.
We have your responses to season two as well to read during this little wrap up. This gives us a little breathing room. This is a short episode, but we do these to give ourselves a little breathing room before we start seasons and everything. And just to get everyone's thoughts.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll get us started here with Bryant. Bryant says, something Better Call Saul does better than any other film or series is an accurate portrayal of somebody suffering from OCD. Chuck, as somebody who suffered through this condition and underwent therapy for it, to treat it, I feel for how Chuck's OCD impacts every facet of his life. With OCD, something seemingly innocuous, like germs or electricity in Chuck's case, can completely consume one's life, shrinking the world into one where simple tasks like leaving the house become nightmarishly complicated. Kudos to Gilligan and his team for shining a light on what living with OCD feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting with Chuck because it is explicitly in the text tied to his feelings of Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how accurate that is to OCD. Like if, you know, if it's a thing where like it usually has like kind of a cause or an aggravator.
Yeah, like a transference or like some kind of, you know, I don't know. He was much older than like an onset of OCD, like might be, you know, so
yeah.
Sometimes just stress or a certain stage of life will trigger the emergence of something that you have the potential for.
Because we know, we saw him when he was, again, right before he moved to Albuquerque, not having it.
Yes.
You know, the implication is he got it when Saul became a lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't feel specifically like OCD. It has a lot of the same symptoms and everything.
Yeah.
I'd be curious as to accuracy with regards to that, but I wouldn't be the person to ask.
Yeah. It's also narrativized, you know, like they are wrapping it up with Jimmy because they're characters. Like it needs to be part of the, you know, part of the story.
Yeah. It is like the central conflict of the first couple seasons.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Luke says, I know I wrote in at the start of the season, but I just listened to Bingo, and I feel compelled to write in again. You talked about the end of season one feeling like he's about to become Saul Goodman, but then it didn't really happen when season two rolls around. It made me realize this is actually really common with prequels that end up getting their own sequels. X-Men First Class, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and the first seasons of shows like Gotham or Smallville all end in such a way that the first movie could take place immediately afterwards, only for a bunch more movies or seasons to actually get squeezed in, often with each of them also trying to end with that same full circle moment. I guess it's an inevitable problem that comes with prequels in the world of art versus business.
Yeah, that is a good observation. That is definitely a thing.
Yeah. Tying sequels and prequels in with origin stories, you know?
Yeah.
Especially with television, the Surf Dracula syndrome, right?
Yeah. It's also just how time works when you're storytelling, like how detailed, how decompressed you want to be is something that when you change that amount, as you go, you literally just have more or less time. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost like you're, when they're doing it for the first season to be him becoming Saul, it's almost like they're doing a different show.
Yeah.
You know, and then they made this change and it required a big change in how they handle things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Zach says, I work in the legal field of Albuquerque. For reference, I go to work every day in the courthouse where you see Jimmy work cases, and just had to jump in to mention how unbelievably accurate Better Call Saul is at capturing not just the experience of the legal profession, but the experience of practicing law in Albuquerque, New Mexico. My husband is a government lawyer here, and he straight up had to dip partway through season two when Jimmy was trying to make a go at Davis and Maine, because as he put it, I already been at work all day. I don't want to come home and feel like I'm at work while watching TV. I had to watch ahead and give him an okay when they got back to the crime stuff. I brought him back when Jimmy obnoxious his way out of the firm, and that's some real nice wish fulfillment for any lawyer. Great show. Excited to hear about things as they spiral out of control. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. That is... It's one of those funny things about this being set in an uncommon city for television to be featured in. Mm-hmm. And also just like a place where people fucking live and work is getting stories like this.
Yes.
We see this occasionally, it'll pop up. Our kind of friend of the show, Nora, on Blue Sky, lives in or around Albuquerque, and they will talk about I don't watch these shows, I don't know anything about them, but like them setting up to shoot something will disrupt the entire section of the city.
Yeah, right? I believe that.
yeah. But yeah, it's good to hear that this is accurate. Finally, here we have Matthew, who says, I'm going to run the slight risk of being the Aaron Brill of your listeners. I want to preface this by saying I consider you both sterling examples of compassion and critical thought. To quote Jake the Dog, I try to be like you in some aspects of my life, Mr. Cupcake. I also fully recognize it's nobody's job to be a walking medical journal. With that said, I think it's understandable, but ultimately not harmless, to describe a neurological condition as fake. The word fake tends to collapse several meanings together: fabricated, imaginary, exaggerated, psychogenic. In everyday speech, that slide makes sense, but when we're talking about an illness, that semantic blur can reinforce the outdated idea that mental health is a matter of willpower. We see the cost of that misunderstanding on this show. The worst thing that happens to Chuck is that he frames his condition as real versus fake, instead of the more accurate structural versus neurological. Even if the root cause isn't structural, that doesn't make the symptoms imaginary or voluntary. Neurological conditions are often every bit as real and intractable as structural or physical ones. Chuck's emotional life is petty and loathsome, and his symptoms clearly fluctuate with these emotions, sometimes manipulatively. That still doesn't mean they're fake. If the symptoms were under conscious control, he wouldn't struggle when no one is watching. His illness is real, just not the version of, quote, real he wants it to be, given cultural narratives about legitimacy and willpower. 10 years ago, when I was in a similar state to post-chicanery Chuck, I was also struggling to overcome those narratives and extend sympathy to my own condition. Hearing it described as fake at that time would have been psychically devastating. So I want to gently suggest substituting neurological for fake when possible. Not because anyone was responsible for protecting listeners from harm, but because it's more precise and more compassionate. Love you both, and I love the show. All the best, Aaron, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I wonder if psychosomatic is okay.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that's a problematic term. The reason why this happens for me is that I think the show is kind of playing with it. Like, yeah. Chuck, his symptoms do vary based on his emotional state. He also controls them to a degree.
Yeah.
Like, there are times when he turns it off, or more, you know, closer to turns it off to accomplish something petty and horrible.
Yes.
Like, there is an element of control that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just talking, I mean, he's not a real person. So I'm not talking about him diagnosing him medically. I'm saying in the show, he does things where he's like, I'm going to do this and be fine with it because I need to accomplish this goal.
Yeah.
Like, it happens in the show. So I think the show is playing with it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand your point, but I think the degree to which, in this case, this being, like, I don't know if, like, psychosomatic is probably more accurate to my mind as I understand it. I don't know if that's a bad term or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like it's somewhere in between that to me in how the show is treating it.
Mm-hmm. It's dubious how much it is being used. I'm going to say this colloquially, weaponized to hurt Jimmy, because he definitely, again, in the narrative of the show and in the dynamic that is being played here, you know, uses it to make Jimmy feel guilty, to, you know, ply control over other people. And then that gets back into, you know, just this real life thing and phenomenon being used for narrative purposes.
Yeah, like it is, it's, and that doesn't mean, even if he's using it, that doesn't mean it doesn't necessarily, he's not feeling it to the degree, but I do, for me, it does muddy things a little bit, make it a little bit trickier. So I feel like, I hope psychosomatic's an okay word for it, because that feels more like, again, there's a degree to which it's real. I think one of the things, the show is being a little bit ambiguous with some of that. Like, yes, he passes out, but he passes out at a moment of intense Jimmy anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, he does not like getting in the EKG, then mm-hmm. he really experiences a panic attack yeah. from that, you know, because he's scared of it. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I just watched the first episode of season 3, where like he more or less just turns it off as soon as Jimmy leaves to go call Howard.
Yes.
He just starts cheerfully taking down the stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing matters. He's yeah. just like, I'm going to be a dick. Mm-hmm. Like, it does feel like he can flip it on and off.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a matter of willpower necessarily. I think that even if he doesn't know it, I do think there's a degree of him that is, you know, again, manipulating it, using it in some way, and tying it to his brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I take the note about precision, yeah. and I hope that people understand I would not say this about somebody in real life. Sometimes you get lax with it. So like calling it spiteful or directed or psychosomatic, in the case of this character, I think is important for analyzing like motivations. Specifically here, but I take the input.
Yeah, that's basically like, I don't have sympathy for Chuck, but mm-hmm. that's not the reason why.
And I mean, we talk about like, oh no, like just if we sometimes catch ourselves, I have distinct memories of saying like, oh, it's fake. Like, oh, he's feeling this. Like it's absolutely, yeah, yeah. you know, real, comma, to him, which is
we're
also
basically
a
looking
shitty
for
patronizing
a word
thing to say.
To describe yeah. the in-between state that Chuck lives in, where like, yeah. this is a thing that is mm-hmm. aspect of anxiety that is related to this, like almost like a theremin, like mm-hmm. his proximity to Jimmy, but also something that he does kind of choose to like raise and lower the knob a little bit sometimes
yeah,
on
yeah.
screen. I don't know how the show would think of this. I'd be curious as to like the writers and mm-hmm. and ultimately Michael McKean, mm-hmm. what he thinks of this in terms of his performance. Like yeah. I'm sure he... when he's performing those bits, he's feeling the Chuckovision mm-hmm. as a thing, but he's a really canny actor.
Yeah.
And when he does be like, no, I'm fine now. Mm-hmm. Like the threat has passed. The Jimmy threat has passed.
Yeah.
I don't feel electricity anymore. Like that is a real thing that he chooses to do as an actor's choice.
Yes.
You know, so yeah, yeah, I'm just curious about it. I feel like it's, you know, note taken, not trying to sound mm-hmm. defensive. If psychosomatic is an okay word, that's the one I'd probably use.
Yeah. Let us know in the comment. Just if there's stuff that we don't know about that. It's an area you get into when there's a bad person who suffers from something that is actual, you know, an actual condition people can have in real life.
It's even worse with this because the show is making it more blurry.
Yeah.
Like that's a thing in real life too, mm-hmm. you know, and the degree to which sensitivity is required for fictional characters is something that like, I feel like is a everyone draws their line. Mm-hmm. You know, for as a thing, but I don't want to catch any strays. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like,
it's not worth it hurting anybody.
Yeah. It's not worth hurting anybody. If saying psychosomatic would make people feel better, that would be good to me. Yeah. But I wonder, or neurological, if psychosomatic's no good. Mm-hmm. I just want a word that is accurate enough that does account for the fact that there's some shenanigans going on.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, I saying fake ironically was in pursuit of accuracy. It's just not, I didn't know a good word for mm-hmm. the weird place between fake and like a disease.
Yeah.
This is.
Yeah. But just input taken and taken in the spirit that it's offered. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That's going to be it. We're going to be back next week with Mabel. Mm-hmm. The first episode of season 3, things start ramping up. We're looking forward to that. If you like this show, we really appreciate you. If you have things to say about season 3, you can write in at any time. So if you missed this deadline, if this feels like it snuck up on you, apologies for that. Just know you can always write in at duckfeed.tv/contact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Please help us by spreading the word of the show and leaving ratings or reviews when you can. And join us in thanking our producer, Gwen, who also composes our theme song.
Yeah, big thanks to Gwen. And we will see you next week. Take care.